This week on the Saturday Morning Tooncast, we'll be watching Futurama.
And an episode of Cowboy Bebop.
All over a bowl of blueberry morning cereal.
Stay tuned. Alright, and here we are with another week of the Saturday Morning Tooncast. I am your host, Jeremy Munkin, with my co-host,
Danielle Yeager.
This is the show where we watch cartoons from when we were young.
All over a bowl of kid cereal.
Which we'll talk about after the cartoons. So this week we're going to get right into it and just watch the old cartoons and talk about them instead of kind of going over stuff beforehand.
This is a special episode. This is our adult episode.
So. Right. This is our once a month adult episode where we talk about stuff that is geared more towards a mature audience. Not in a pornographic way, but in a just for grown-ups way. And I will be doing the first one this week, and I'm going with one I don't know how familiar you are.
Oh, good, because that means that you didn't pick the same one that I did, last adult.
I definitely picked one that you are not familiar with, or at least that I didn't think you would pick, because it is actually kind of, we never talked about whether or not this would be out of bounds for the podcast, but it's anime.
Okay.
Have you ever watched Cowboy Bebop?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not a lot, I don't really know much of the story, but I feel like I watched an episode or two. My friend is, when I was a kid, was really into it, so.
Yeah, and I kind of consider it a cartoon from my youth because it was around the late 90s, 98 and 99, that the dubbed versions came here. And, everybody in my high school was buying and trading the VHSs and, mm-hmm. and super into it. And every time a new one would come out, everybody would be so excited.
I think I didn't know that it was an adult cartoon, though. I just thought it was a kid cartoon.
Cowboy Bebop?
Yeah.
It was pretty violent. Okay. And there were some plots that went over, like there was a transgender character that was an assassin, huh. And there was all this stuff. But yeah, I mean, it appealed to a younger audience, but it was probably like a late teen to adult.
Because I remember, so the time that you were watching, I was 10. So I watched it when I was pretty little.
Yeah.
So that's why I think of it as, because I don't really remember
it very well.
So you
shouldn't have watched it.
Yeah.
you were deeply disturbed by it.
Probably, which is maybe why I didn't really get into it. I just watched an episode or two. So I don't remember it very well. So this will be good to get more of the storyline, and maybe I will get into it and watch it.
Yeah. So just a quick background on what the show is. Cowboy Bebop is about a team of bounty hunters in the far future after a series of gateways have been installed in the solar system to allow faster than light travel between planets, and a lot of planets all over the galaxy have been colonized, but everything's got kind of a grunge cyberpunk thing to it where everything feels kind of dirty and old. Everything kind mm-hmm. of seems like a Chinatown, but it's like all Chinatowns in space. And there's a lot of gang activity. There's a lot of criminal syndicates and underground. So things are rough, and there's a lot of opportunity for action and chaos to go down.
So what episode?
Sorry. It's an episode called Ganymede Elegy, or Elegy.
Okay.
I wish I knew that word better. the crew of the Bebop is, you have Jet, who owns the Bebop, which is like a big fishing ship that holds the smaller ships that they fly and do their missions on. You have Spike Spiegel, who's kind of he's a ace fighter pilot, assassin, used to be a syndicate gang boss or hitman or something. You have Faye, who's a con man who barely wears any clothes, and she's actually from our era, but she was cryogenically frozen and then forced to live a life of crime to pay off her debts from the being cryogenically frozen.
Okay.
And then there's Edward Wong Hao Pipaluski III, who is this little girl from Earth who is a radical hacker, who's like a cybersecurity expert, and she's, I think, like 10 or 11. And then there's Ayn, the Pembroke Welsh Corgi, who is a genetically engineered data dog who has mysterious powers related to technology.
Okay. So this was on Cartoon Network, is that right?
It was on Toonami, eventually. It was like early aughts. Its original airing was obviously in Japan, but sure. It came here. The big thing in the 90s were they would come out with single DVDs that had four episodes each, and those released like once every 6 months over the course of a few years, because there's only like 12 episodes.
Okay.
So that was a big thing. Everybody had those DVDs with like the four images, but it was a monotone. Pretty cool package design.
Cool.
Want to go watch?
Yeah.
All right. We'll be right back.
think it's time to blow this scene. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
And we are back from an episode of Cowboy Bebop. I had originally said we were going to watch Ganymede Elegy. I don't know. but I was actually confusing that episode for an episode called Gateway Shuffle, which is the one that I wanted to watch. But that episode actually didn't have Edward in it, and I wanted something to be representational of the entirety of the Bebop crew. So we ended up watching an episode called Cowboy Funk from near the end of the season. What did you think?
Well, when we first started watching that first one, I was like, wow, this show was really boring. So this episode, you know, had a storyline that I could get involved in. First one, I was like, what is even happening? So this episode, I mean, I could see why I didn't get into it as a kid. It's like a weird combination of being like really simple and adult at the same
time. What do you mean?
Like, there's kind of one small storyline. There's not, like, a lot of depth to characters.
At least in that episode, I didn't get
that.
Well, this is probably the cartooniest episode of Cowboy Bebop.
Okay.
I would say about half of them have kind of a similar tone to that one we started to watch, where we're getting more into the characters' individual backstories. And whenever we see the history of Jet or Faye or Spike, it usually gets pretty dark because they all have very troubled histories. And it's kind of like there's a reason they all went into bounty hunting and kind of detached themselves from society and live on a spaceship.
Okay.
Because Spike was in the mob and like cut his ties with the other people in the mob. Jet was in the ISSP, and I think I forget what it was that turned him away from, you know, being a law officer and actually starting to do this stuff. And then, Faye, her, you know, everyone she ever knew is dead because she was frozen for so long.
Is that the little girl one?
No, that's Edward. Edward was abandoned by her father, because he's some kind of crazy eccentric scientist.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like maybe this is a show where, like, you need to watch every episode because, like, yeah, I didn't really know what was going on with each of those characters, like, that they just popped up for a second or whatever. Like, they didn't necessarily always say their names or...
they didn't have their names just floating over their heads.
Right. Like, I feel like maybe I would appreciate it more if I, like, watched it not just episodically, but in a row or whatever. Yeah.
Though this... among all episodes is one where you don't really need to know who anyone is.
Yeah, it was enjoyable.
Yeah.
This episode was enjoyable for sure.
Yeah, so this is Cowboy Funk. It starts out with watching it again, I was reading they actually did pull it from air after September 11th.
Oh yeah, cuz I was like, this is a little awkward.
Yeah. And this episode kind of gives more screen time and more, like, lines to oppositional characters than a lot of the episodes, because usually you just see everything focused from Spike to Jet's point of view. But we have Teddy Bomber, a.k.a. TB, who I believe is based on Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber.
Right, that makes sense.
Yeah, and his kind of running gag is that he's constantly blowing things up with teddy bear bombs and then trying to convey what his agenda is.
But no one's listening to him.
Yeah, no one listens. Everybody cuts him off. Every time he lays a bomb, he gets caught by both Spike and Andy Vonda Anayakde, I think his name was. But he's Little Andy, the cowboy.
Yeah.
Which is, like, hilarious to see in this very spacey flying car world, someone riding around on a horse.
Yeah, in an elevator.
Yeah. Yeah, that horse rides three different elevators over the course of the show. But yeah, the original air date was listed on IMDb as November 2001, but I also read on another page that it was pulled from air on September 11th. But I don't know. This wasn't on Toonami until a lot later, so I don't know the exact air date or what?
Yeah, what's sometimes going on there. When you have a show that was in a different country and then it came here, you get different air dates. Because I had that problem with Mona the Vampire. Yeah, it was Canadian.
So as far as voice talent goes, Steve Bloom is the voice of Spike, and all of the voice actors in this have in the American dub have done pretty much a lot of anime and a lot of video games, a lot of assorted voices. Steve Bloom's big credit right now is that he is Zeb on Star Wars Rebels, which is a huge Disney XD show going right now.
So obviously they're not the original voices. They're just the American voices.
Yeah, they're the American dub. It was originally in Japanese, and I don't know that much about the Japanese voice talent.
Sure, yeah.
Though I watched it originally in Japanese because I was studying Japanese in high school.
Oh, cool. Okay, makes sense.
I've always... Because there's not that much... Cowboy Bebop. There's just these, I think, 15 episodes, or I forget how many there were.
It was 20-something.
20-something? Okay.
22, 23, something like
that. It's one season. They did a movie. It was all self-contained, unlike a lot of anime that's just kind of built to go as long as they'll let it go. The music was amazing.
And the opening sequence is really enjoyable.
A song called Tank by Yoko Kanno. It's like the only theme song I've ever like had on a playlist because I would just love that. That song just amps me up. I'd watch Cowboy Bebop all the way through probably once every few years. And even now just sitting and listening to Tank, I love that song. It's just like so impactful.
Do you watch a lot of other anime shows or?
Not really. I mean, I watched Dragon Ball Z in high school, and Trigun was a big one that I watched. But really, Dragon Ball Z, Trigun, and Cowboy Bebop are the three, and I watched them all.
Do you count Pokemon?
I watched Pokemon and Digimon, but that was more of like, I had a period of time where my TV would automatically turn on a timer, and it was on Cartoon Network or Nick or whatever I went to sleep watching, usually Cartoon Network, and there would just be Pokemon or Digimon or Yu-Gi-Oh! On, and I would kind of blearily just stare at it.
Because that's the only anime I ever watched as a kid was Pokemon. And I feel like people who like watch anime, like, they really enjoy that genre. That's not like a show that they watch. So I didn't know if it just doesn't really fit in that genre very well or...
I think Pokemon is so universal at this point. It kind of... And I think Bebop has this a little bit too, where it transcends the realm. Like, you don't have to be an anime person to...
Yeah.
To, yeah, be into it. But I think anything that's that dubbed... Like, I think the kind of difference between an anime person and someone who just likes cartoons is someone who will watch them subtitled.
Yeah.
Because that's just a certain level of devotion. But I think my biggest complaint with most anime is how recycled it all is.
Because
there's a big one recently that a lot of people are into, they still are, called Attack on Titan. And I watched the first season or so, and I was into it. It's cool. It's a story about this, like, weird walled off town that's constantly under siege by these giant nude people. it's like these, like, it was kind of like, you know, kaiju, but they just look like weird shaved baby men.
And sure.
It's kind of like the lumber after them. But after a few episodes, it was always like a still image that they would pan over for 15 seconds with dialogue, and then they would recycle background images and like single sequences. Whereas Cowboy Bebop, there's not a wasted frame through every episode. It's, sure. I mean, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
The animation is so fluid and hand-drawn. It's like when I was in high school, I went to Boston for the first time on a school trip, like a journalism trip. Mm-hmm. And it's like the best gift I've ever gotten for anyone as like a souvenir was I went to a Japanese store in Harvard Square Mall.
Sure. Yeah.
And there's like a store that sells weird anime stuff, and they had an animation cell from Cowboy Bebop that I got for Josh, my older brother. And it was from one of those sequences where they have the big shots, the news source for bounty hunters.
Okay.
Where you have, their names are Punch and Judy, and you have the girl with the open shirt who's got the little baby voice, and the guy who's weirdly ethnic.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it was one of the stills from that, and I was just like, yes, I will take it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't watched a lot of anime, and I feel like when I have watched it, I'm like, I don't really get it. And this was a little bit more accessible. Like, I feel like a lot of times it's kind of, from what I've seen, I'm definitely not an expert and haven't watched a lot, but like, it always seems like a little overly dramatic or like chaotic. Like, it's not always a storyline that's easy for me to follow. And I don't know if that's just the anime I've watch or if that's just me or what, but it makes sense. The shows that like do get mainstream, like Cowboy Bebop or Pokemon or Digimon, I haven't really watched that, but I assume it's the same. Like, it maybe follows a little bit more of a formula that like we're used to for cartoons in America. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. And Cowboy Bebop, I mean, it has about the same narrative complexity as Firefly, because it's basically a small crew on a spaceship that does jobs, and the job begins and ends over the course of that episode. Mm. So pretty much.
I haven't watched that.
You haven't watched Firefly?
No.
Oh, Danielle.
Sorry.
But, yeah, some highlights of this episode. There's the masquerade ball where they track down Teddy Bomber, and then there's that big chase sequence. And that has some of my favorite animation through all of Bebop, where, you know, Teddy Bomber's getting away in, like, a little convertible. Then you have Andy chasing after him on his horse with Faye on his back. And he's got a rocket grenade launching shotgun.
Yeah, that just looks like a regular shotgun. Yeah. So it's a little off-putting when it just, like...
And then the two of them are being chased by Spike in the air in his mono racer fighter jet thing. Mm-hmm. And he's, like, blasting buildings with his machine gun. And it's just, like... so many layers of action and explosion, and it's just, it's very fun.
Yeah, but they seem very casual that, like, he's just blowing things up. They're like, oh no, he blew something up.
Right. And that's why I love this, like, you know, there are life or death stakes throughout this whole show, but this one, it's just fun. There's, like, there's no, like, mortality to it, which is why I feel like it's the most cartoony episode. Because it's just, I mean, they're, like, shooting at each other to prove a point, and, like, imagine how jarring it would be if Andy, in that final fight sequence on the top of the city hall, had actually just, like, killed Spike or the other way around. Like, oh, God, what have I done?
Well, it also seemed weird that, like, when they're on their ship, it seemed like they're, like, starving to death almost.
That's a common thread is, They're very skilled bounty hunters, but they're bad at kind of landing the bounty. Mm. So they'll have like this $300 million bounty, but then, he'll say something and they'll let him get away, or they'll do $3 million worth of damages and only make a net of like $100. So there's this constant, narrative thread of Spike is always hungry and Jet is always trying to placate him with like, he calls it like his famous recipe, beef and onions, but they'll show it and it's just a pan of onions. Like he just got a couple onions and fried them.
Yeah, but it was interesting that then they went to this masquerade ball. They went to these things that seemed like higher class or that included food, and they didn't seem like, oh my God, there's food here or something. Like,
yeah, they always seem to be more than well equipped, and there's storage units on the Bebop that they have, like, you know, machine guns and net cannons and all that stuff. But yeah, they can't afford a sandwich every once in a while.
So that was interesting. So we switched up the cereal a little bit. I decided to bring some donuts. So we ate donuts with our first episode. So do you want to hear what our cereal is going to be?
Yes.
So we're going to have cereal with our second episode. And it is a cereal I liked as a kid, but it is an adult cereal. It is Blueberry Morning. Have you ever had Blueberry Morning?
Never even heard of that.
Have you had like a Banana Nut Crunch?
Yes.
So it's like that same brand that like,
oh, what's it so called? Like as opposed to banana bread, it's like blueberry muffin flavored?
Basically.
That sounds good.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to have for cereal.
Okay. And what cartoon are we going to eat that during?
So as we seem to always have these like connections between our episodes or shows, I also chose a show that has somebody from our time, what's the word? Frozen?
Oh, okay. Futurama?
Yes, I chose Futurama. So yeah. As soon as you said that there was a character like that, I was like, that's hilarious. We always have some sort of thread between ours.
Yeah, Fry and Faye both are people of the 20th century who end up in the future.
Who have similar names, even.
That's true, Fry and Faye. Faye and Fry.
So I chose Futurama. It's just such a quality show.
Oh, it's easily one of my top five, like, all time.
Yeah. So it's hard to choose an episode because it is such a quality show. There aren't any bad episodes, including the pilot. Like, you know, sometimes you kind of have to warm up a show, but you really don't with this. So I chose one of my favorites, which is Roswell That Ends Well.
Oh, that's a good one.
Which is from season 4, episode 1, original air date December 9th. 2001, written by J. Stuart Burns. So this episode actually did air on Fox prior to the original cancelization in 2003. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's all the...
The first of the four times it was canceled.
So, yeah. So, it basically... You guys, I'm sure you know Futurama, but they were through Rough Draft Studios, so they did traditional cartoon drawing within their animation studio, but they also used CGI, which is a little bit unusual for a cartoon at this time. I don't know if any are doing it now, but especially then. And it's had this like crazy long run, so they had the original series or whatever starting in 1999, and then through 2003 it was on Fox, and then it went to Cartoon Network. Along with Family Guy, which was another Fox canceled show.
Yeah.
And, you know, got fan base.
The repeats were there. And then I think they brought back for season 6 on Cartoon Network, and then it went away.
So then Comedy Central picked it up in 2008. Mm. And so they came out with 3 movies.
Was it? I thought it was
through 2007 through 2009. 4 movies, I'm sorry.
Right, because it was Beast with a Billion Backs, then Into the Wild Green Yonder...
That was the last one, I thought.
Oh, no. Bender's Big Score, Beast with a Billion Backs.
Wild Green Yonder is
the
last
one. There's the D&D one.
Yeah.
That was Bender's Game? Yeah.
Yeah.
Bender's Game and then Into the Wild Green Yonder.
Yeah. And now, and so it was on Comedy Central until 2017, just in syndication, stuff like that. And now it's on Sci-Fi.
Oh, that's right. They did a marathon recently. That was like their, just before Thanksgiving, they played back to back every single episode of Futurama. Kind of like how FXX did that with The Simpsons when they got the rights to show Simpsons.
Yeah. Yeah. So Comedy Central was the one who got on board for the actual movies and then brought them back for new seasons in 2010. So one of the things that makes this show so good is like the writing staff was like one of the most highly educated writing staff. So like across them, they had 3 PhDs, 7 master's degrees, and cumulatively had over 50 years at Harvard. So like which I appreciate because they made a point of like doing things that, like, actually could have been sci-fi, not just, like, crazy.
But yeah, I remember there's a story from the episode that they did with the Globetrotters where the background joke that they wrote on the chalkboard was actually a proved theorem that they were later able to publish as a scientific
paper. Yes, I remember hearing about that.
In a science journal. Like, it's like, oh, wow.
It's incredible.
Yeah, for a background throwaway gag.
Right, so you have the, like, science fiction based on like actual science that was like really high quality, but then also just the normal writing was very high quality too. Like you first kind of get, at least for me, I first got into it thinking it was kind of this episodic type of show, but really they bring you back all the way to the pilot and things they drew in there originally planning these bigger story arcs, which appreciate.
They put those back in. Like the stuff with Nibbler hiding under Fry's chair, that he wasn't originally there. They say in the commentary that Fox allowed them to go in and change the original episode.
So well, that's a bummer.
Future viewings, people could see that, but that wasn't originally planned.
Okay. Well, that disappoints me.
Sorry. But yeah, that's, and yeah, a lot of that writing talent came from The Simpsons, so they were all like tried and true,
right.
Harvard Lampoon geniuses.
Yeah, so Matt Groening grabbed one of the writers from The Simpsons to be the showrunner and executive producer.
Dave Cohen.
David
X. Cohen, even though his middle name is an X.
And they were the showrunners during the entire thing. So, like, they were really involved in it.
David X. Cohen's baby. He oversaw all of it. Yeah.
And they were always the creative consultants. And so it technically ran from 1999 through 2013 with those different things happening. And most recently, I haven't watched it yet, but they came out with a new episode. It's a radio-only episode.
Oh, it's not good.
Is it not good?
It was an episode of the Nerdist podcast where he got on a bunch of the crew and it was, they had just kind of written a radio play.
It wasn't good?
I didn't even listen to the whole thing. It kind of is soulless.
Well, they've made a point to, they've kept all the original voice actors throughout all these different variations of the show. And they've talked about several times, different people have mentioned like the show, they still have more stories to tell. You know, they have the comic books.
Comic books, the iOS game or the mobile game. What is that? Futurama something worlds?
World of Tomorrow.
World of Tomorrow, yeah.
So they kind of hint that they're not really done with the stories and they're going to see kind of what happens. They've always had a dream of having like actual film, not like a straight to DVD, but like another cinematic thing that they would, I don't know, release in theaters, yeah. actually.
And as much as I love Futurama, and it's one of my favorite cartoons of all time, the impact of the last few seasons, I just kind of felt like there wasn't anything left to say. And I kind of am okay with it being finally dead. After all these years and all these revivals, because it kind of just wore out its welcome. Even though the very last episode, the time loop thing with Fry and Leela was very nice. Something, I don't know, it felt like they were telling the same joke over and over and over and over again.
I've always enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, I would still take more Futurama over most things that are on TV right now, but like, I would almost prefer to see them go out with dignity and not...
be another Simpsons?
Yeah. Ugh.
But that's a... yeah. It's always been better than Simpsons as far as the longevity, I think.
Yeah. I would say peak Simpsons was definitely better than peak Futurama.
Yeah.
But the...
it's so different, though, too.
But the average quality of all Futurama versus the average quality of all Simpsons...
yes.
Like, Simpsons has shot itself in the foot over and over again with all of these bad seasons.
But it's also just a different show for a different...
yeah.
group of people.
That's true.
So total, they had 7 seasons and then the 4 movies, so 140 episodes. So we're going to watch Roswell That Ends Well.
And that's episode 1 of season 4.
Yes.
I remember them saying that, a big driving ideology of the show was that time travel would, not be a thing early on. Cause I think, Matt Groening didn't like time travel stories. And I believe this is their first time travel story. And, they wanted to make sure this was perfect.
Yeah.
Because it was such a risk to go down that time travel route with all of your continuity hanging in the balance.
Right. And to make it not a thing that they can then just do all the time.
Right.
They very carefully made it like this crazy thing that happened. So, yeah. You ready to watch it?
Yep. We'll be right back. We are.
So, what did you think of that episode? As we were both quoting along to it.
That episode that we've both seen 7,000 times. That we both
I'm sure you hated it.
Yeah, it was a real arduous journey through time. No, I love it. I love Futurama. It's one of my favorite shows. I'd say my favorite episode of Futurama is probably how Hermes got his groove back from season 2.
Mm.
But this one is also very good.
Remind me what episode that is?
That's the one where Hermes gets downgraded as an inspector.
Oh, that is a great bureaucrat. Yeah, yeah.
Because it's got the musical piece. It kind of involves everybody and it's like jam-packed, like every second is another jam.
Yeah. Yeah, I picked this episode because it's definitely a Fry, Leela, Professor Bender, which I feel like are the 4 main characters.
Yeah.
Heavy episode. And it puts in line like a great storyline that ends up coming up later in the past with Nibbler and the fact that Fry has this weird brainwave.
So he doesn't have a theta brainwave because he's his own grandfather.
Yeah. So I thought it was a pivotal episode, so that's why I picked it.
Yep. Starts off with Fry trying to microwave a metal thing of Jiffy Pop while the crew is watching a star go supernova and getting enveloped by the star. So the star's red takes over the ship and hits the microwaves blue, and that causes them to open a time hole. They rip the universe a new time hole.
Yeah,
and they get
that's
sent
what they
back
call it.
To 1947.
Uh huh.
And then
in Roswell.
Yeah. Well, they then fly back to Earth. But somehow the time hole seems near enough to Earth when they leave. So they must not have been too far from that supernova.
Yeah. Well, they go through, who knows? They didn't spend a whole lot of time explaining the journey to get place to place, which is
the
pretty typical for them. So we land at Roswell and end up, Zoidberg ends up being the alien that gets caught, and Bender's body gets...
Bender doesn't want to wear his seatbelt as they're crashing, so they land, and he flies out the front window, like, miles and miles.
Yeah.
And then they don't want to help Zoidberg pick him up, so they kind of just leave him in the desert while they just go back to the ship and hang out.
Yeah. Which is also funny because while, like, they're shaking and going through the wormhole, basically, none of them are wearing seatbelts.
Are they?
Like, they're, like, all this jerky movement, they're totally fine, and then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they weren't going to hit anything in the wormhole. It was when they were crash landing.
I guess.
And they took on a lot of clocks.
Yes. So there's lots of great jokes, of course, and...
And this is from that era of Simpsons Futurama where literally every breath, every shot is just dense with jokes. Like, there's every scene where they're establishing a shot and people aren't speaking, you see, like, three sight gags.
Background jokes, yeah.
Either someone just doing something funny as they're walking by or a sign that has a little gag on it. I mean, I've seen this episode... I'm sure 10 times in my life, like, mm-hmm. with commentary, and there are still jokes that I was picking up on just looking at signs. Like, there was Fedoras for Boys was one of the stores, and then there was, Gill's Televisual Radio, and you also have the, what was it, the, on that Sears Roebuck, there was a big banner that said, free girdle with purchase of tractor.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but the main storyline is that Fry gets freaked out that his grandfather's gonna die and that he's not going to exist anymore. And so he follows him around trying to save him, which really just gets him into more trouble.
Yeah, Enos.
Mm-hmm. And eventually he ends up causing his death. And then Fry is very confused to how he is still alive and determines that his grandparents must not actually be his grandparents, so he comforts, sleeps with his grandma.
You know what I didn't think about until just now? That's Professor Farnsworth's ancestor, too.
Yeah.
So you'd think he'd be like, now you're my great...
Right.
I mean, I guess he already was.
Well, they do make that joke in later seasons, too.
But why wouldn't Professor Farnsworth be impaired by his inbreeding?
Mm, good point. Maybe he is.
Yeah.
But he's too old to be significant for Nibbler. I don't know.
I guess Farnsworth does become a little bit more doddering after that point. Maybe that signifies his downswing is when his family tree gets trimmed.
Well, you have to think, too, that that was always how it was supposed to be, because otherwise they would have disappeared immediately when he died, right?
Right, yeah.
So that's obviously... That's how it was supposed to be.
Well, that's also something they bring up in Bender's Big Score, I believe, is that time paradoxes are self-correcting. So it might just be that after Enos dies because of Fry's actions, Fry is then drawn into a situation where he fixes the loop.
Right. True.
And that's another thing that we see again in Bender's Big Score is at the end of this episode, Bender's head falls off the Planet Express ship because they're very unsafely just watching with the bay doors open
as
they fly away at a 45
vertical degree
angle.
Yeah.
It's like, that seems unwise.
Yeah, but they find his head and he's not at all upset about it, even though his brain was lost earlier in the episode. Like,
well, there's so many references to, like, time travel plots and other things, because there was an episode of Star Trek DS9. This might have been after this Futurama, but it's basically the same thing where two Ferengis go through a wormhole and end up back on Earth, and they are the aliens that are captured at Roswell, and it's pretty much the same thing, except it's Quark and Rom from Deep Space Nine. But then there's also, in the early 90s, there was an episode of The Next Generation where they go back in time and, like, hang out with Mark Twain, and Data's head gets left behind in this cave, and then, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years later, they find Data's head and screw it onto his body. And he's like, oh, that was crazy.
Well, it's funny because, like, the theme with most time travel in TV shows is, like, you're going to change the past. But then there's shows like Doctor Who where he travels through time and, like, creates all sorts of chaos and never worries about changing the past. So he's
intentionally trying to change the past or something like that.
Or it's usually, like, he's supposed to...
Yeah.
Fixed it.
Well, and that's, that kind of fate of like, whatever the Doctor did or does or will do is supposed to have happened or supposed to will have had happened.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting because that theory is just, like, there, but, like, nobody actually knows if...
Oh, like in real life, if time travel?
Well, I mean, no, they say that, like, Professor Farnsworth and Fry, none of them had traveled to the past before. Like, they're just going off of the trope that, like, you're gonna do something in the past.
Yeah.
So, well, like...
And this was their first time travel episode. I think they were planning for it to be one of their only time travel episodes. Mm-hmm. So they were, like, just shopping out every single time travel trope they could and yeah. just lining them up all and hitting them over and over again. To the point where Farnsworth, by the end of this, just like... I'm sick of this. Let's just...
Yeah, let's just shoot it up. Yeah,
let's just blow everything up and get the hell out of here because it doesn't matter. Which is true.
Yeah, so they go back to the future and everything seems fine. Nothing has really changed except...
Bender's a spaceship now.
Yeah.
I thought it was really impressive for the Roswell scientists to reassemble Bender's shattered body into a functional hovering spaceship. It's like they must have a very... good grasp on technology.
Well, it's also funny because it's so tiny and they thought that somehow Zoidberg traveled in that.
Right.
So the kind of B story is that they are trying to get answers out of Zoidberg, who is just like happy to have anyone paying attention yeah. to him and giving him food. And so they're like cutting him open and he's like chatting them up.
Yeah. That was definitely a Independence Day reference where they lay out the buffet for Zoidberg to see what he eats. And then he eats all of it and slaps it up against the glass that they're looking at. And then he smashes his face against it.
Yeah.
And they all run away. But he's like, he's nothing but cordial to them. It's unfair that they're so cruel to Zoidberg. He just wanted to be friends.
Well, it's so in character for him too to be like obsessed with food and overly friendly and like yeah.
Though there was kind of a dark moment that I never really thought about where they're like, why have you come to Earth? And Zoidberg just goes, I ask myself that every day. It's like, oh.
We do get that story later on though. Like
why he left?
Yeah.
Do we know why he left?
Yeah. So he wanted to like be a comedian.
Oh, and his planet's not mm-hmm. yeah.
And then his parents were upset about that. And so then he decided to be a doctor. And then they were upset at him about yeah. giving up his dreams of being a comedian. But his,
season 5 episode, that's Lobstertainment.
Yeah, but his, like, great uncle or whatever is an actor, comedian from the talkie.
Harold Zoid.
Days of, I don't know.
Giant laser disc.
That's,
you put in, like, the 10-foot laser disc into a player.
Yeah. So the other thing that's really great about Futurama, along with Simpsons, is that they have a great cast of voice actors who do multiple voices. Like, they kind of have a core cast that does most of the voices, very similar to how Simpsons works.
Yeah, and a lot of them were big hits before Futurama, but I think this was pretty much John DiMaggio's breakout role.
Yeah, like, so he does Bender, he also does Elzar and Yor-El, and of course some other various voices.
But yeah, Trace McNeil, who was a big Simpsons holdover. You have Billy West, who was Ren and Stimpy, and he did some old Hanna-Barbera voices, and he was a mainstay on the Howard Stern show for a really long time, and he would just hang out with Howard Stern and do crazy voices.
Yeah, and Trace McNeil came up in both of our shows last week.
Yeah, she's everywhere.
So Billy West does Fry, the Professor Zoidberg, Zap Brannigan, among other voices. We've got Katie Siegel doing Leela, John DiMaggio, like I said, doing Bender, Yor-El, Elzar, and others.
Who's Yor-El?
He's the robot cop.
Oh, right, okay.
I just mentioned the characters that I think are in the most episodes, or like I remember them the most, but you might not.
It's funny too, again with the crossover between the two episodes, the Andy, little Andy in that episode of Cowboy Bebop is basically doing Zap Brannigan.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I wrote that down in my note. It's like, oh, he's like, when he was hitting on Faye, he's just like, let me look into your eyes so I can see the reflection of being.
Yeah, that is so Zap Brannigan.
Yeah.
Want some champagne?
Yeah, it's real velour.
So Tress McNeil plays Linda, who is the co-host of the news.
Yeah.
Hattie, I think her last name is McDougal. She's like kind of the crazy cat lady of Futurama. And then Mom, who has like the robot company. We've got Phil Lamar
Bender's
doing
Mom.
Hermes and some various, but not very many. Lauren Tom, who does Amy Wong, and I think maybe Amy's mom, but not a lot of characters besides Amy. Maurice LaMarche does Calculon, Morbo, which is the other news guy, the
news monster,
the alien, and Kif. And then Dave Herman does Scruffy and Roberto. Ha ha!
Yeah. And more. And Maurice LaMarche is also the Brain and Pinky and the Brain from Animaniacs from last week. And yeah, Phil Lamar's been in a million different cartoons. But yeah, I mean, that's Futurama's got like one of the most all-star of all-star voice acting casts, like probably since a show like Animaniacs.
Yeah, and they, like I said, they stayed with the show the whole time. Like, it's been a long run when you think, even when you think about the first run, the movies, the second run, even recently with this voice, this radio show, like, they had the actual actors again. So, like, they obviously care about the show and enjoy these characters, too.
Yeah, and it's probably not that hard to nail down most of the cast because they are professional voice actors.
Right.
But Katie Sagal she was an actress. She's not one of these kind of perennial voice talent
right.
type people.
Right, I mean, she's
like
in Lost.
Was she?
Uh-huh.
Who's she in Lost?
She's, what's his name? The guy who's in a wheelchair? His, like, girlfriend?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Katie Sagal plays Locke's girlfriend. She's also Jake Peralta's mom in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. She was the matriarch in, like, Sons of Anarchy. Al Bundy, Married with Children.
Yeah, she's
that was before this. This is kind of where her start came was.
Right, but her voice is very distinct. That's what I'm trying to point out. Yeah. Like, if you've seen any of those things, you could probably, and then you hear Lila's voice, you can kind of picture her, or vice versa. If you see her acting something, and then you picture Lila.
But that's also why she's not one of these additional voices. Like, everyone else on the cast will do seven other characters, but she's just Lila because she's not really a voice actress. She's just Katie Sagal doing a great Katie Sagal.
Yeah, I think she might also do Lila's mom.
Oh, yeah, that makes
but
sense.
But I think that's it. And Lila's mom's not in very many episodes anyway.
Three or four, yeah. But yeah, this episode had one of my favorite things, and they talk about it in the commentary as something that they're proud of, but there's just this little acting moment where Lila is playing with a salt shaker in the diner.
Yeah.
And it's just like she just kind of scrapes it across the table, and it's just this like very human moment that just kind of lets you know where she is in that moment without needing like facial expression or, you know, voice anything.
Right. They are fairly calm though that they're going to be stuck in this time period.
Yeah. I mean, they're usually pretty flippant about anything because it's
Like anything can happen, right? When you like they're a delivery company, but they get involved in all sorts of crazy hijinks and
yeah, they're supposed to be a package delivery company, but they certainly do things above and beyond what you would expect UPS to do. They've got a mutant Cyclops as a captain.
Good depth perception.
Right. A delivery boy unstuck from time who has zero expertise, and a bending unit designed to bend things, which if you know, packages usually have stickers that say, do not bend.
Yeah, he doesn't really do much. But it's kind of this, you know, the professor takes almost any job, and he has a history of killing off his crew.
Right.
So he's kind of...
This is the third Planet Express crew?
At least, yeah. So it's kind of almost like it's a front for a different business, basically.
I mean, he uses it to fuel his scientific things.
Right.
Which
he'll
don't see a ton of.
And he'll do different package deliveries that are very sketchy, like to like one time he delivers weapons to like is basically the Crips versus the Bloods.
Oh, yeah.
And like he does all sorts of sketchy things, or like, you know, it's pretty much whatever pays I feel like he'll do.
Well, yeah, I mean, right early on we have deliveries to the robot planet, which is like outlawed, like you're not supposed to be there. So I'm sure breaking some kind of treaty to go there.
Exactly.
It's Planet Express ship, or Planet Express, I'm sure, is just like, I don't know, it's like probably you get there through the dark web, and like you have to pay in Bitcoin. And
right. Well, because you have to think, it doesn't always make sense. Like, it makes sense if someone was shipping something from Earth to another place, but oftentimes it's like on the same planet.
Yeah.
Then they just somehow have this middleman in a different planet, so that part of it doesn't quite make sense. It's definitely a front for something. Something shady is definitely going on.
Yeah, I think a lot of the brain power behind the writing talent here doesn't go into plot continuity. It's more into the scientific whoosie what's its that drive the interesting sci-fi aspects of the show.
Yeah, so another great episode.
Yep.
Futurama, and both of these episodes, Cowboy Bebop and Futurama, right now you can find on Hulu. Of course, that always changes. You never know. when shows are going to go off of different platforms. But as always, you can buy them on Amazon Prime or whatever you watched along with us. And what did you think of the Blueberry Morning cereal?
That was good. Was it looked like it said it was called something Grains.
So Great Grains is the...
Great Grains is the brand and the brand. Blueberry Morning is the cereal?
Yeah. So they have a few different types. Honey Bunches of Oats, Banana Nut Crunch, Blueberry Morning.
Yeah. When you said Banana Nut Crunch, that sounded vaguely familiar. But yeah, Honey Bunches of Oats was probably their more recognizable one.
Yeah. It definitely was. I just ate these two more.
Yeah. So it's got the crunch aspect of it, which is really good. And then it has like little desiccated blueberries.
Uh-huh. Dried blueberries and those almonds.
Yeah, and the almonds. I think the blueberries are kind of... They get stuck in your teeth.
Yeah,
because they're very sticky. Gummy and sticky. I liked them, but yeah, that aspect of it was kind of challenging, I guess. Is like I felt like I had to kind of struggle through the blueberries. Mm. But it's... I mean, the flavor-wise, it was really good.
Yeah, I think that...
Got mushy pretty quick.
I recently been eating... I bought that one, which I hadn't opened yet. And then I also bought the... Banana Nut Crunch, which was my favorite.
Spoiler, that's probably next month.
No, I've almost finished it.
Oh, okay.
But I bought them because I thought, like, oh, these I could eat these kind of like granola or whatever, which might work a little better. But I definitely prefer the Banana Nut Crunch, but I would give this one a solid 8 spoons. Like, I really enjoy the flavor.
Yeah, I was thinking 6 or 7, probably 6, just because the dried blueberries, while the taste was good, the texture kind of distracted from the rest of the cereal. Mm-hmm. And even when I tried to let them just kind of sit at the bottom and you know, soak up
rehydrate.
Some milk. Yeah, and rehydrate. It almost made them just gummier. Mm-hmm. So that was, I mean, it's like it tasted good, but it was not kind of the texture that I wanted in the cereal.
That's fair.
But it was, you know, all right. So
it's
6.
Like adult mushrooms. I meant marshmallows.
Adult? Wait, why aren't marshmallows for adults? What do you mean?
You know, like in the kids' cereal, there's the little
marshmallows. Yeah.
Like this is like the little candy.
Yeah, that's true.
Basically. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was all right.
Okay.
I would have it again. So that's it for us this week on the Saturday Morning Tooncast. A little bit of a shorter episode this week, but we are recording on Thanksgiving weekend, so I have to go hang out with my family.
Yep. And where can people find you?
I am on Twitter at ZenMunkin, and I'm also hosting another podcast on the Heroes Podcast Network called Red Shirts and Runabouts, where we talk about Star Trek.
And you can find me streaming on Twitch under D Yeager, YEAG. 88, and you can also find me on YouTube and other social media under my name, Danielle Yeager.
Well, that's it for us this week. Thanks for watching with us,
and we'll see you next time.